I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
And I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. This week, we're talking about hummus for dinner, date caramels, and we're just going to talk a little bit about the state of things in our kitchen, sort of a midsummer check-in, if you will. But first, let's compare notes on something we read this week, or really something we heard over the weekend, which is that Pulitzer Prize-winning food critic Jonathan Gold of the LA Times passed away.
Very tragic news. Yeah. And for those of you who may not know Jonathan Gold's work, he was critic and journalist in the LA area for, I don't know, it must have been 30 years at this point.
Yeah.
And he really focused on the taco trucks, the small, global influenced food businesses, a lot of times immigrants that were making the meals of their home countries. He was so respectful and eloquent, and he really used, the whole topic of food as a way to address, all kinds of human interest stories. And, I know he inspired a whole generation of food writers, including myself.
Yeah. I mean, his work was really groundbreaking in a number of ways, that he treated all food equally, that he came to it with no sort of like snobbery or hierarchy, that it was all sort of open for conversation, just as, you know, the taco truck was just as valid as the five-star restaurant.
There's a wonderful documentary about him and his work. If you've never seen it, it's called City of Gold. And as an interesting side note, Marisa's Food in Jars logo is actually shown on the screen during it. So,
which is totally weird.
Watch it to remember Jonathan Gold and his legacy of work, but also keep your eyes open for the Food in Jars logo.
Yeah. So he died of pancreatic cancer, and apparently it was a really fast diagnosis. He was diagnosed sometime
in July.
So this month, and he died really quickly. Of course, you know, terribly, what a lot of us thought when we first heard it was, oh, did he have a heart attack? Because they didn't even announce that he was sick.
It was very sudden. And I will say something, you know, I can be a fountain of unpopular opinions, but I'm just going to share my thoughts, which were, Jonathan Gold, you know, wrote about a lot of food, most of it aggressively unhealthy. There was a real celebration in his work of consumption, overconsumption. You know, he was a consumer of alcohol. He was, you know, obese probably. And much was written about how he spent like his days driving around in his car eating. So a very sedentary lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I think that it is the responsibility of those of us that write about food to acknowledge the importance of food in our health. Like, you can't pretend like food doesn't create the foundation of your health. And, yeah. You know, pancreatic cancer is closely linked with both obesity and alcohol consumption. And obviously tons of people get pancreatic cancer for other reasons. But, you know, his lifestyle probably played a role in his cancer. And I don't mean, I'm not trying to blame him at all, but I'm, from my perspective as a food writer, it's for me a lesson, an ongoing lesson about the importance of talking about food, and it's in context of our whole lives. It's not just a constant taco party, you know, like, you know, it's not like fried food is fun, but like to talk about fried food without mentioning that it's a once in a while treat is like, to me, a little bit irresponsible. And I know in your work, you focus a lot on health. In my work, I focus a lot on health. And I just wish that we could see a trend in the food writing world that acknowledges the relationship between food and health.
Well, and I do feel like there is this sort of dualism in food writing right now. We've got the sort of like clean eating, hyper healthy, austere side, and then the indulgent side. And it would be nice to find like that middle way, to be able to walk a path where you acknowledge that sometimes you want a treat, and that treat isn't, you know, a banana or, you know, frozen banana subbing in for ice cream. Like that's a delicious treat.
That's a treat. I mean,
that is a treat, but I'm saying
not on
like,
the same, I ate ice cream every day at the beach when I was on vacation.
Yeah.
I don't regret it. I don't regret it at all. And,
but just saying like,
yeah,
there's space in this medium and in this field to find ways to be, you know, walking a middle ground that I don't necessarily think is always, acknowledged or appreciated. And so it's just a thing to be aware of.
I just thought immediately when I heard about his death that his unhealthy lifestyle, you know, made it not all that surprising to me that he died at 57.
Sad, though. Tragic.
Very sad. Yeah. Oh, my God. I'll miss his work so much. Obviously, especially if you watch City of Gold, you can see how kind-hearted he is. What a wonderful person. I just wanted to mention that to be, you know, it's just the honest – I'm just giving you the honest take of what was in my mind when I read the news.
But bottom line, the food world, the whole world lost an incredible mind and a kind person. And he will be missed.
Very much so.
Okay, so let's pivot.
I know, something a little lighter.
To what's for dinner, Joy?
A little fluffier.
Yeah, literally.
Yes. Hummus. People, I'm sure we've talked about hummus on this show multiple times
before. We have talked about hummus a lot. You are a known hummus evangelist.
If you follow me on Instagram at Joy Manning, you see every third, every fourth photo is a hummus photo. I should just do a whole account dedicated to hummus.
Oh my God, you totally should. Hummus for dinner.
Yes. I mean, hummus for dinner, that's what I want to talk about today, because hummus is not often thought of as a dinner food. But I make it and serve it as dinner a lot. And it's really satisfying. It's really healthy. It's really delicious. And I actually recently wrote about all of this for the Washington Post's Voraciously site. And I will provide a link in the show notes with some recipes for me that you haven't seen before. You know, I know the Instant Pot hummus recipe is in our Resolution Recipes ebook. This is a recipe with canned chickpeas, and it's a very quick, it's a quick guy, but I also provide a variation for those of you who don't have a food processor.
Oh, wow.
Now, you guys, I know that you all listening to this show have food processors, but not everyone does, especially the younger folks. So I hearken back to my own hungry youth, hungry, hummus-loving, no food processor-having youth. When I made my first batch ever by smashing the chickpeas to a smooth paste with a rolling pin inside a gallon zip-top bag.
Whatever works.
It works. I did it again to test it for this story, and it really does work. I mean, obviously it's better if you have a food processor, but if you don't, it can be done. And I made it, and I slipped it into Dan's lunch. He did not even know the difference.
Really?
It's slightly less smooth, but if you're not paying attention, you're not really going to notice it.
Oh, that's so cool.
And also, I put something in this article that I know you will not like.
What?
Do you want to guess?
That I will not like?
You're not going to like it. We've talked on the show about you not liking this specific thing.
Oh, God, I don't know. What is it?
Beet hummus.
Oh. Well, yeah. I get, you know.
I said, purist object, by which I meant you. But I said the hummus police have not come to take me away yet.
Is it all? It's all beet, though. Like the
There's
one,
no chickpeas in it. Yeah. It's roasted beets and tahini, basically.
It's not hummus.
And lemon and
As a dip, garlic. I like it. Right. But hummus, it is not. Anyway.
And I didn't provide like a full-on recipe for it, but I did mention that you can sub sweet potatoes for a sweet potato hummus.
It sounds delicious.
If I called it a sweet potato pate, you'd probably be totally on board.
Oh, yeah. I have no objection to a beet or sweet potato dip. Spread, but it's not hummus.
Anyway, I will post the link on the show notes. It's at WashingtonPost/voraciously. You can find it by googling how to hummus Joy Manning. I want you to go see it because I want to you know, write for them in the future, so every click counts, my friends. All right, so that's my pitch for making and loving hummus and eating it for dinner, lots of it.
And I will say, too, we are still in sort of the depths of summer. So if you are looking for something you can make that'll be cool, that you don't have to cook or heat up your kitchen, there is nothing better than hummus in the fridge.
I also provide recipes and ideas for toppings, which I think really take hummus into the dinner realm.
Well, and I saw on Instagram you did tomatoes.
Oh, sometimes I just do. I mean, that's what you saw on Instagram, just sliced quartered cherry tomatoes.
But we're heading into like high season for tomatoes, like a tomato basil cucumber salad on top of your hummus would be amazing.
I think I mentioned that specific
thing.
Did
you?
I do. There's something so tasty about tomatoes and hummus to that end. And one of you on Instagram mentioned that you were making something that combined Marisa's tomato jam and my hummus recipe.
Oh, God.
And I was like, that's a good idea. And
so that sounds amazing.
Like almost immediately, I toasted a nice slice of like multigrain sourdough nice layer of your tomato jam topped with hummus.
Was it good?
Yes. I bet. We had like a little cafe, this would be our signature item.
Oh, God, it totally would, wouldn't it? Yes. Be? That's amazing.
Anyway, well, let me tell you about something else I made this week.
Yeah.
Which I think I told you about at the time you said you hadn't made it, which surprised me since you've made everything under the sun.
True.
And this has like a real crunchy California health food kind of vibe. It's date caramels.
I'm totally here for date caramel. I've certainly made lots of date things. Like there was a whole chapter in my last book that was dried fruit sweetened preserves. And so I use dates in a lot of stuff, but it never occurred to me to just make date caramel.
Okay. Well, let me tell you how this came to be.
Yeah.
You all probably know if you listen to this podcast that one of my regular clients is Kroger Supermarket Magazine. I love working with them. And this is a reason that I love working with them. They sometimes ask me to do stuff that I would have never thought of on my own.
Uh-huh.
Like when I saw date caramels, I was like, what is that? Is that caramel that you put date in? Like what even is that? Do you start with date syrup? No, it's so simple. You take preferably nice, soft dates. You know how when you go to the store, there's like,
yeah, there's those really variety. Luxurious soft dates and then some that are a little bit more dried out.
And if you have the real dried out ones, you can hydrate them by soaking them in water for 5 minutes and draining them. But I have found that the plush ones really are the best. You just chop them up into small pieces, put them in a food processor, add you can use a variety of nut and seed butters for fat. Because we're making something that's supposed to be like caramel, so you need fat. I used almond butter.
Okay.
And then salt, because you want to like a salty caramel, and vanilla, and a couple of tablespoons of coconut oil. And you just puree it till it's very smooth in your food processor.
Uh-huh.
And then you take a piece of parchment or wax paper and you press it into the bottom of like a loaf pan.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put a layer of this sludgy, fudgy type, it's pretty soft mixture. And I used an offset spatula to make it flat. It was maybe like 1/2 inch thickness. Uh-huh. And then you freeze it for an hour. And I will be darned.
Really? So good?
Yeah. They taste like caramels.
Wow.
I ate so many of them. I think I gave myself a stomachache. They were really delicious. And then finished with like some flaky sea salt.
Yeah.
Super good. Super easy. You know, it would be a great snack for kids. And I do have other ideas, like I want to do it with tahini.
Mm. Oh, God, that sounds so good.
Not to make it a cousin of hummus.
Yeah, but like sum tahini. I bet you could use the chocolate tahini.
Oh, my goodness. That would be incredible. That sounds so good.
Oh, my God.
Or like I wonder if you could use prunes or another sugary fruit like that. And have you ever heard of these date caramels before?
Well, it's funny. You had mentioned them to me and I hadn't heard of them. And then I went to the fancy food show.
And you saw them.
Of course, I saw a million different, like dates were one of the big trends at the fancy food show this year.
Well, because they're so intensely sweet without being refined sugar.
Yeah. And so, but I haven't made them and I didn't end up tasting them at the fancy food show. So I'm definitely going to make a batch. They sound delicious. Well, and like dates, they're just, They're a good sweet treat just on their own.
Yeah.
And so this just sounds like you're taking it up a couple notches.
When I was in college, there was like a place I liked to get lunch called the Soup Kiosk.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really in it so much for the soup, but because in addition to your carton of soup, you got like a beautiful syrupy, sweet, sticky, soft date, like wrapped in a tiny curl of wax paper. And I was like all about the date. I think I had never had dates before in my life.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was so great.
There is Tanaya Darlington, friend of the show, Madame Fromage. I haven't been there myself, but a couple times she's shared dates with me that she gets at a mosque up in Fishtown.
Oh, wow.
And they are the most amazing dates because they're imported directly from, more date-friendly countries.
Mm-hmm.
And this mosque sells them as a fundraiser. And that might have been the best date I've ever had.
Are they
in my
available
life.
All the time?
I don't know. You could ask her. We can find out. We'll do a little inquiry and find
just
out.
Just curious as a date lover.
Yeah. But those were great. So let's just do a little check-in about how the state of our home cooking in the summer. I know it's funny. Summertime feels like the best time for home cooking because there's so much produce. It's all great and easy. It needs so little to be made delicious. And yet summer is often the time for me when I have the hardest time cooking.
I have been so busy with work and deadlines running up to my vacation. And then since actually right now as we're recording this, you and I are on a break from the podcast conference that we're at. Yeah. So I came right back from vacation, dove right into the podcast conference. It has been all frozen veggie burgers, hummus, stuff from the freezer, restaurants. Yeah. Like, I have not been doing a great job this week.
Yeah, I haven't either. The last 2 weeks, I haven't really cooked much. Been hitting the fast casual restaurants in my neighborhood pretty hard, which, you know, at least it's a relatively healthy meal.
I would be doing that if I could.
You know, I've had Sweet Green twice, Real Food Kitchen a couple of times, but I really miss cooking. And it's funny how out of control I feel about life when I'm not cooking. Like, there's a ton of stuff in my refrigerator right now, but I don't know what's in there.
I also feel like I'm missing out on fun and playtime for myself.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, because you're not cooking, you're not taking that time to sort of explore and stretch your brain in that way.
I recently saw on Instagram Heidi Swanson of 101 Cookbooks, who I know that you and I are both fans.
Yeah.
She did these beautiful turmeric tofu rice paper wraps, like a summer roll. I was like, I really wanted to go to the store and buy all the ingredients and make them right away, but I just didn't have time.
Yeah.
So my midsummer kitchen is a little time-strapped. It's a little frantic. But I do feel like I could be turning a corner now. This is the last day of the conference. I have no more travel on the agenda.
Yeah.
So
I do have some busyness coming up. I'm teaching two nights next week and then heading out of town to teach up at the Omega Institute. But I know I'll find my way back to the kitchen. It's just hard when so much of my identity is tied up in who I am as a home cook. At this podcasting conference we've been at, I keep finding myself introducing myself to people as, you know, hi, I'm Marisa. I make a podcast about home cooking. And then it feels a little false because I haven't cooked at all. You know, I haven't been cooking at all. But I do know that for me, summers are often this way because summers are my busiest season. As someone who writes about canning and preserving primarily, this is the time of year when I teach. And also, I've been canning, but I haven't been cooking.
I've been noticing a lot of late night canning posts on your Instagram stories.
Well,
And I'm like getting ready to close my eyes and go to sleep.
I got 15 pounds of apricot seconds last Thursday. And so
how much does that cost?
15 pounds. They typically charge $2 a pound for seconds.
Really?
So 15 pounds of apricots was $30.
Around $30. That's so reasonable.
I mean, it is.
I can see why you would take advantage of that.
But so it wasn't expensive. It wasn't like the money, but it's like that I do that thinking, well, I'm going to be so happy in January to have all this apricot jam or, you know, around the holidays to give to people's gifts. And I do it. And then I give up the time to actually make myself a good dinner because I'm canning, which is ridiculous.
I find myself in that situation when I'm doing a lot of recipe development. Yeah. And I think this happens to you too. You're like doing something for work and you have like frustrations around it, or like you've made it three times and you're sick of it, and like at dinner time you just don't even want any part of it.
Yeah,
you just want something else.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, I guess this is all to say that the state of things in my kitchen right now is a little bit of a mess. It's a little crazy. In addition to the apricots, I have bags of leftover ingredients from my cookbook photo shoot, so it's just a little bit chaotic in my culinary space right now.
Do you have anything on your summer cooking wish list?
Well, I'm feeling very much like I'm not getting enough tomatoes. And I know that there's still time. Like, at least we've still got another like 8 solid weeks of tomatoes before they start to go away. So I don't feel like I've missed out yet, but I haven't had a tomato sandwich. I haven't had a really great tomato salad yet. I am so hungry for like a really great tomato sliced over a piece of crusty toast, sprinkled with salt and a couple of like fresh basil leaves just kind of draped on top.
I mentioned the frozen veggie burger train I'm on, which we had last night when I got home from my spinning class. But you know what I made to go with it super quickly?
Yeah.
I just chopped up 2 scallions
mm-hmm.
And put put it in a bowl with a large yellow heirloom tomato that I chopped up in 1 second, salt, white balsamic vinegar, and olive oil. And it was so, good. Yeah. It was really good. Like this, in this height of tomato season, you really don't have to do anything.
But I haven't gotten my hands on a good tomato yet this year. So I haven't been to the farmer's market in like 3 weeks.
Oh.
So I need, this weekend, I'm going to the farmer's market. I'm going to indulge in some tomatoes. I'm going to do it.
I've definitely been eating the tomatoes in large part because they're so, they require so little of you. Like, just slice it up, salt and pepper, like even just salt and pepper. That's even just salt.
I know.
It's enough.
I know. I just haven't been able to get them. So like, that's what I really feel like I'm missing right now. I feel like I am to a certain degree missing, like I haven't had a good peach yet this year. We're just hitting peach
season. I haven't
had
any peaches either.
And I desperately need some watermelon.
Oh, do you know what I'm really digging?
What?
Blueberries.
The blueberries have been really good this year.
I've been having muesli for breakfast almost every day with like one part muesli, one part blueberries.
So good.
Dan is like, do you got enough blueberries there? I said, almost. I'll get more tomorrow. I've been buying them twice a week.
Oh, wow.
We took them to the beach with us. Like, the blueberries have been knocking my socks off. I saw beautiful blackberries at the farmer's market yesterday.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't choose them over blueberries. I could have gotten both. I don't know what I was thinking. I was just kind of in a rush, I guess, trying to do a farmer's market sweep. But yeah, they've been delicious. And of course, I've been eating a lot of salads. And this summertime lettuce has been beautiful.
Yeah.
I sent Dan to Head House on Sunday
mm-hmm.
because I wanted to go work out. And he told me Green Zamin is back with their mix and match.
Oh, you love that.
I did. We talked about it last year. And I do love that. So
I'm going to Head House this weekend. It's been a while. I haven't been there all season since it's gotten really good. So
that's part of the reason, I guess, my home cooking is so boring right now is because I have been eating a lot of salads and a lot of like tomatoes cut up over hummus or whatever.
It's funny that the things that I feel like would be so exciting and that I'm craving because I just haven't had them are the things that make you feel like your cooking is boring.
It just makes me feel like I'm not cooking. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
You're assembling. But I think that the best of summer cooking is often just the assembly.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And the oven, who wants to turn the oven on? Or even the stove. I told you my air conditioner is on the Fritz downstairs. Yeah. That remains in effect. So there hasn't been a whole lot of oven cranking.
Yeah. I think right now, too, the things that I want to make are those late summer things. Like, I'm really ready for, like, really good eggplants to make, you know, a roasted eggplant dip or I love to just kind of cook on the stovetop together onions and tomatoes and eggplant and some red peppers and zucchini and then push it through food mill. So it's sort of like a ratatouille soup.
Interesting.
And then I top it with a little Parmesan cheese and some like croutons or something. And it's so good. And it's just like a big bowl of savory vegetables. Those are the things that right now I'm really hungry for, and it's not quite the season for them yet.
Other than those spring rolls that I mentioned earlier from 101 cookbooks, I also have on my wish list of things to make. I don't know if you remember, if you guys out there will remember, I talked about this summer chicken tomato stew from Nom Nom Paleo last summer, or perhaps 2 summers ago, I guess.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was an Instant Pot stew, and I just suddenly was like, oh my God, I could make that with seitan instead of chicken.
Oh.
So that's on my list of things that I want to make. And I'm also, on the topic of tomatoes, dying to do a tomato salad that's dotted with the ricotta.
The tofu ricotta?
Tofu ricotta. And herbs so and olive oil. Yeah. So
you know what else would be really good?
What?
Is to cut tomatoes in half, do like a broiled tomato with that tofu ricotta on top so it gets a little bit crusty. That'd be so delicious.
I have one more thing of summer cooking inspiration to share.
Yeah.
And that is when I was at the beach, we went to Beach Plum Farm, which mm-hmm. is like the farm that a lot of the good restaurants at the shore get their produce from. And now they are serving real casual breakfast and lunch. You're going to love this. So a perfect fresh baby zucchini cut in half, roasted briefly so that it still has a lot of integrity and texture with like a breadcrumb topping on the cut side topped with poached eggs.
That sounds amazing.
It was the best thing I ate down the shore. I couldn't believe how good it was. Okay.
That sounds
great. Sort of like our meandering summer check-in, summer kitchen wish list.
You know, I actually feel better now.
You do? Like
there's still time. There's a lot I want to try. And once I get my kitchen back together and find my way back to it, there's going to be plenty to do.
That's true. There's always lots of inspiration out there.
Yeah. Okay, Joy. So what are you loving lately?
This is really coming out of left field. I love to make my own salad dressing and do it all the time.
Yeah.
We were at the beach, and on our first night, we were going to have veggie burgers and salad. Or I was going to make roasted vegetables because I brought a sheet tray, a sheet pan, and I brought olive oil. And my brother-in-law was like, let's have salad. And I said, but how will we make the dressing? I didn't have a whisk, you know. And he goes, we'll buy it. I was trying to not be uptight. So I was like, okay. So meanwhile, me, Jill, and my niece Henrietta went to the beach for a couple of hours. And my husband and Mike went to the Cape May Acme. Okay, so I come home. And the bottle of salad dressing that has been acquired was purchased by my husband, Dan. It is Ken's Steakhouse Caesar. Now, this is a funny thing because when Dan and I first started dating, we kind of bonded over like certain things that we both really liked. And the Ken's Steakhouse Caesar was one such thing. You know, neither one of us was like big into cooking at the time. And so that's why he picked it up. Newsflash, Ken's Steakhouse Caesar is incredibly delicious. It is an incredibly delicious salad dressing. It has anchovy in it, has Parmesan, it's full of salt and sugar. It's like incredibly good. I mean, we brought the remainder of the bottle home, which was surprisingly little considering like we were not exactly cooking hard or making a ton of salads. And I'm afraid that I'm going to buy another bottle when it runs out. When was the last time you bought bottled salad dressing?
So Scott really likes like Thousand Island or Russian dressing. Mm-hmm. And so we often have that in the fridge. So it's not too infrequent, but most of the time, like I will say I do love, the Annie's, shiitake mushroom salad dressing. It's like a sesame and shiitake mushroom.
There's mushrooms in the dressing?
Yeah. It's like dried, reconstituted shiitake mushrooms.
Well, that's interesting.
I love that one. I've actually tried to replicate it a couple of times, but it's never quite as good. But yeah. I'm not opposed to a bottled salad dressing. It certainly makes life, it makes the barrier to salad entry lower.
I have been a huge opponent of bottled salad dressing, but now I'm like, Ken's has proven me wrong. I don't know. I just really, maybe there was some nostalgia involved. Maybe it was just like incredibly aggressively salty, which I love. Like,
well, and everything tastes better at the beach.
I've had it at home.
It's still good.
It's really good. I mean, it's really great on tomatoes, yeah. Actually, because of like the high salt content and the anchovy quotient.
Well, and it's so creamy.
It's not creamy at all.
It's not creamy?
No, it's like a vinaigrette in quality.
Interesting. I guess I haven't had that one in years and years.
I feel like it's not exactly like a most popular salad dressing brand, but it has obviously been around for more than 16 years if Dan and I were eating it in 2000 and
yeah.
Three or whenever that was. And it's still
holding up on shelves.
Now. Why don't you guys, if you have a favorite bottled salad dressing, tell us in the comments because maybe I'll branch out. Maybe I'll have a total change of heart and become a bottled salad dressing user. That'll never happen. But I want to try. Yeah. I want to know.
Well, and just before we go to the closing too, the other thing you guys could do for us is we were at this podcasting conference and, one of the things we've really learned is how important it is to help people learn how to listen to podcasts. So if you have a friend that you think might like Local Mouthful, but they don't listen to podcasts because they don't know how, take their phone and help them figure out how to listen because we love doing this and we love building our audience and having more people listening. And so if you think you know someone who might really enjoy becoming part of the Local Mouthful family, really show them how they might be able to listen.
That would be great.
Yeah.
And that's it for this week's edition of Local Mouthful. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.